listening to the Best of the Browns.
Ball game over! Browns win! Browns win!
A weekly mix of 92.3 The Fan's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
I will miss. I'm about progress when it comes to this. If you're going to pay a higher price, you always will. You might as well be comfortable. I don't know if there's the AFC North. We have our style of football. Well, three out of the four teams play in a dome are going to play in a dome in the NFC North. Because you got the Bears. They're moving to an indoor facility at some point here, are they not? In downtown Chicago. I know they were thinking about Arlington Heights. I look forward to the comfort in some levels. At the same time, I will miss the neighborhood feel of the tailgating that goes on over at the stadium right now. I don't know if that can be replicated whatsoever. And I really don't want them to try. I really don't want them to try, because I think that if you build the new, and it looks like they are going to, obviously we should have an official. I know we've made several official announcements, but there should be an official announcement coming, because Mike DeWine, the governor of Ohio, approved the $600 million yesterday.
He approved the budget.
The budget.
He approved the way that it's being financed with the unclaimed funds. So it's the end of an era. The days of outdoor football,
yes.
Weather, snow, sleet, wind, all the stuff that we used to glorify about our past, and that walk from the Muni lot, that is all over. This is the end of an era, which I do wonder how. I'm somebody who is excited about the dome. So
yeah.
Absolutely thrilled that we are partaking in the new era. But the memories, those are done. I mean, well, I guess you got a few more years to create some lasting ones. But I wonder if it'll be the same. I think there will be some people maybe that will be done with the whole, hey, we're going down there with the campers. That's it. We've got to start to transition towards
see how much that's going
this
to be.
New era.
You have to see how much that's going to be. Now, it might be a little bit easier for some, because I know it's a walk, but I don't know. And I've been to, you know, Pittsburgh kind of has that. I got to be honest with you. I've been to Pittsburgh games. I've been to Cincinnati once, where it was before a game. There was nothing there as far as tailgating was concerned. I've been to Detroit. And it was actually, it's hidden. It's like all, it's in parking decks. It's very hidden. Their tailgate scene, Kansas City, giant open lot between Arrowhead and Kauffman Stadium. A lot of fun. They were very welcoming. The team was terrible at the time. This was years ago, but a very welcoming, hospitable group. But in the places that I've been, I haven't seen the type of tailgating that I've seen in Cleveland, where it's like they're their own little communities. They're their own little neighborhoods. And these spots in these areas at the pit, at the Muni lot, you know, under the bridge, they're passed down, it seems, from father to son to grandson. It's a family tradition. And I think that you can start your own traditions. I just don't want them to all of a sudden, like, you go there day one and like, okay, this parking lot over here on the west side, we call that the new pit. And this one we call, like, no. Just, we'll establish our own. We'll let Browns fans establish their own. That part I will be, I will miss. The stadium itself, I got into this fight with Jason last week. It's not the stadium's fault. Browns teams weren't very good, but I think there were a lot of memories made with the fans there. So I want to know if there's any part of people that are going to miss outdoor football in Cleveland, and if they're going to miss tailgating in the Muni lot. Are they going to miss the Muni lot? How much does this turn them off completely to Browns football? Because I have to tell you that if the renderings are realistic, we saw renderings before Progressive Field, and all of a sudden I'm seeing storage units out there in right field. Those were not part of those original renderings that we saw. If the renderings are any bit realistic, I mean, it's going to be pretty wonderful looking.
It's going to be awesome.
That's all going to come at a price. I'm sure there's going to be higher prices. Are you willing to go along with that? Are people going to be willing to go along with that? Because now it's like, well, you what you want. Now we get, we're going to, looks like we're going to get what we want. So always be careful what you wish for. It's like, well, an indoor facility, you're going to be able to bring a lot of things. I don't think you're bringing WrestleMania. Sorry, wrestling fans. I just don't think that's going to happen. The Vegas thing now. I really think that, you know, after they kind of turned tail on New Orleans and went the other way and went back to Vegas for next year, it's like, all right, they're going to do their own thing. If anybody can get it done, maybe we can help get it done.
You mean what? Is it going to be in Vegas every year? What do you mean the Vegas thing?
Owen, I think it feels like it's going to be in Vegas. It feels like it might end up being exclusively in Vegas.
So they're moving everything out there.
Yeah.
But we are talking about trying to get the Final Four, right?
Yeah, and I think
the men's Final Four.
And you can, I think everything else is on the deck. I think the Super Bowl is on the deck.
Big Ten championship, if there still is conference championships, get into the bowl. Can you get into the playoff mix in general?
I want to be in
for college football.
I think that that's a conversation now.
All right, what else?
I think the city of Detroit will have something to do with that. But
yeah, I mean, we're going to be competing. There's no doubt.
I think Indianapolis isn't very happy we're getting this dome.
Part of the sell of this, right, to everybody involved, including the state, was, hey, we've got viability here to bring in some of the biggest events. Obviously, the one I haven't mentioned and the one that's going to be on everyone's mind. And I don't know, are we going to ever know for sure whether or not there was a promise behind the scenes? Is Cleveland getting a Super Bowl or not? We've always been told no chance Cleveland could get a Super Bowl. Don't have the hotels. People aren't going to want to come here in February. Well,
it seems that you're building like six hotels over right by the stadium. So,
I mean, that's a start. Sure.
I got hotels in downtown Cleveland. I got hotels in Akron. I got hotels in Canton. How far away am I allowed to have hotels? I want to know how far away.
When they have the Super Bowl in Miami, it's not technically, I don't think, in Miami.
It's out in Miami Gardens.
It's down the road, and people stay, based on traffic, an hour away.
Have you been to the stadium from downtown Miami?
I've driven by it. I have not been
I've been. It's like an hour. It feels like it's an hour and a half
traffic
away.
It is.
Yes.
It absolutely is. So maybe it doesn't necessarily matter. What I'm wondering is, was there a promise behind the scenes? Because obviously there's nothing official. If there was something official, it would already be out. Like, the Browns are getting a Super Bowl. We'd be bragging about it. It'd be the biggest push to try to get that funding. That wasn't. So nothing's official, but are we getting one? I would love to hear from the lawmakers. I would love to hear from the governor. I would love to hear from the Haslams. And I imagine now that this was not vetoed, the source of funding was not vetoed with the unclaimed funds, that we're going to be hearing from a lot of people very, very quickly.
I think the only thing that's off the deck is WrestleMania. I think everything else is in play. Concerts, Final Four, everything else.
How could you get a Super Bowl, but you couldn't get WrestleMania?
Because it's an NFL football team that's a tenant in this brand new stadium. It's that easy. You build a new stadium. Detroit got a new stadium. They got a Super Bowl. They got two Super Bowls after they built stadiums, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that you could possibly get a Super Bowl. I can't guarantee it. I might be a little bit disappointed if we don't, but I'd be more upset with the NFL. Because I got to figure out what our rooms are. How many hotels do we actually need? Because I've heard a bunch. We were able to hold conventions here recently in the last 10 years. But if we're not able to hold a Super Bowl, we're not able to hold a Super Bowl. Either way, it's going to be a spectacular thing to see. I look forward to being able to see it. I also got to tell you, I want, like, your kids, I want them to see it. Like, I think we got 2025, 26, 27, 28. We got 4 more years, right? 4 more years in this stadium, including this year. My son's 10. Which, do I take all 3 to the Muni lot before it's over so they experience the Muni lot?
Of course.
Am I allowed to do that? Am I a bad parent? Would you call Child Protective Services on me if I did?
I think you got it. I think it's...
But you tell me some of the stories of the Muni lot from your day, and I don't know if I want my son walking by that.
Probably not, but I think you have to do it. I think it's part of the fabric of Cleveland, the history of football. To know, Kenny, you're a historian.
You have to do it, Kenny. A guy who has a list of 50 movies he has to see. Yeah. I think this is one of those rite of passage things.
I think what about Mace Dog? He'll be 5 by the time it's over.
Out there.
I don't know if Mace Dog is allowed to go. I don't think executive producer Sarah Ono is going to let us do that.
I'll be lucky if I'm ever allowed to go to a football game again. Regardless of where it is, I do wonder, Kenny, like, and I'd love to hear from the fans who've been, especially the ones that season ticket holder with all the bona fides, that I've been doing this for all the years, for 40, 50, 60 years. I've been going down to Municipal and then to Brown Stadium, been doing the Muni lot thing, been making that walk, turns into a walk of shame on the way home. so many times after all the historic collapses and the bad losses, but we still came back for more. Are you going to keep an open mind about ending that era of football and moving into something that's going to be completely different? Because that's exactly what this was. This will be totally opposite of what it was like to go down to downtown Cleveland in that stadium for the entire lifespan.
Did Lions fans feel that way when they moved from Tiger Stadium? I know this is a generation ago, for crying out loud, but did they feel that way in 75 when they went from Tiger Stadium to the Silverdome? Because I've only known them to play indoor football. And Detroit's a tough blue-collar city in the Rust Belt the way that we put ourselves in. They have a lot of pride up there in Detroit. They believe they're a tough people, and they play indoors in downtown Detroit. And being in that stadium, you've been in that stadium. It's beautiful. I never got to go to the Silverdome, but that stadium's beautiful, and it's fun inside. And any time that we ever had anybody go on road trips and were fans like reporting back from Minnesota or Indianapolis or obviously Detroit, they would go, this is amazing. You know, watching this indoors and it being 10 degrees outside and being able to take my jacket off and be comfortable in here, this is something I want to do every day. Like, that's changed a lot of what they are. And again, you can get people in for the experience. You're still going to have to put a good product out there in the field. I don't care what anybody says. The secondary market, if they suck in 2029, yeah, you'll probably get a lot of people who are there to just experience the stadium. But in 2030 and 2031, if things change and it's not so new anymore, you got to put a product out there. You're going to see $7, $8, $10 tickets up there for the upper bowl is 65,000 people. I think it's going to be 65,000 for football, and I think around 75,000 for other events, from what I saw on some of the news sites out there.
Tell you what, though, 65 in football is going to sound like 100.
It's going to be indoors.
When they're good, and they eventually, yeah, they'll have to be good at some point, it is going to sound like it's going to be deafening. It's going to be raucous. It's going to be everything. You want to talk about real home field advantage? Mm-hmm. You're not going to have it with the weather anymore. Maybe you build a fast team that can play fast indoors. But I will tell you this, sound-wise, you'll finally have that home field advantage it feels like we haven't had in a long time.
Fandom's changing big time. We'll talk about it in the podcast, the emerging podcast scene, 10:15 Eastern on 92.3 The Fan Extra on the free Odyssey app. You are getting the first... You really got the first taste of it in 2018... 2018, you got your first taste of it. It ain't changing anytime soon. And I will discuss that with Tone during the emerging podcast scene. I also have my top 50 movie list that I want to watch with my sons before they graduate high school, and we're never going to get to that.
Is the Running Man on that? Because I guess there's a new Running Man.
Running Man is not on.
There's a new trailer. I had to bookmark it right after the show. I'm going to watch it. I'm excited.
And we're not going to spend the last segment of the show, you guys just guessing. But take a guess at what movie, if it's on the list.
Cabin Fever.
Cabin Fever, not. Owen? I'm going to do it until one of you get it right.
Flowers in the Attic.
It is not on there. Lima.
Human Centipede.
No. Mitch.
Mitch's mic is not set up for him.
Yeah, who saw that one coming? Owen.
That was my fault. It's my turn already?
Yeah, go.
On Golden Pond.
I'm going to keep it going until you guys pick one that's on the list. Go.
8mm.
No.
Mitch is ready now.
Mitch. Mitch is not speaking.
Mitch is now not participating.
Okay. That's always a way to get yourself more airtime. Owen.
Fast Five.
No, you.
Naked Gun, 3 1/3.
I will do the whole effing segment this way until you guys get it right. Pick one that's on there. There's 50 plus movies on this list.
I got one. Should be on there. Lawrence of Arabia.
No, go.
Actually, the Ten Commandments.
I think the Ten Commandments are on here.
It better be, or Judah Ben-Hur.
Ben-Hur is on the list.
Yes!
Ben-Hur is on the list. I watched Ben-Hur with my grandma, and I was like, why are they rowing? What's going on here? And grandma's like, shut the bleep up. This is a good part. And I go, okay, grandma. Go get my cigarettes. 216-474-0092.
Ooh, Harley Davidson and the Marbone.
I think you're upset to hear it. But remember, guys, there's a reason you're hearing it. It's because they have to say it. New York Post put out the article that Deshaun has taken Shador under his wing. And the responses were magnificent.
It's good to see, right? You got a lot of those responses. Yeah. It was nice to see somebody who's been through the NFL, has had the ups and the downs, be able to take someone under their wing, because who better to serve as a mentor in a situation like that? A cautionary tale, so to speak.
Well, actually, I do think there's something he could teach him, but... I mean, about what the NFL does. I mean, you and I went through that whole thing for 3 years, and it's like, well, wait a minute. Was he put in these positions by certain people who now all of a sudden brag about what they got going on down there? Don't think I didn't see the role that that team, in those files, don't think we all didn't see the role that that organization had in all that stuff. So I think there is something there that could be educational. But, guys, you're going to hear a lot of stuff. I really don't think he's going to play this year. But if he does play that, you know that the wheels have come tremendously off. He is represented by the most powerful man in the NFL, arguably in sports. You're not going to sit there and say a bunch of nasty things as his employer, because if he ends up never playing in the NFL again, I think that's grounds for a lawsuit more than likely. Oof. And Deshaun Watson, he has to go through every single hoop that he has to jump through to make sure that he gets every penny that's entitled to him. And he is entitled to every single penny. Whatever money he's got coming to him, he deserves it. Go ahead and give it to him. You sign him to the deal, that's the way it goes. So these two sides have to keep saying nice things about each other. And I'm sure he's not disliked in the locker room. I'm sure he's not disliked by the guys in the quarterback room. So until he's officially no longer a Cleveland Brown, you're going to keep hearing those sort of things. I just don't believe he's going to play at all. But every time there's any sort of a story that comes out, like we'll talk to Mary Kay on Thursday, and we'll ask him about it, and any sort of story that comes out, we're going to hear the groans, because they have to be nice to each other. No matter what, it's a legal document here, because he's as much as it may bother some people, he is in good standing in the league, is he not? He could, if he was physically able to play, he could play week one if he wanted to. There is nothing stopping him with the NFL. And so you can't, if he's going and doing everything he's supposed to do as a player, and he is, you can't go rip at him as an organization. You can't do that. Let me get to Jeremy in Akron. I got a lot of responses about the PSLs and everything with the season tickets, and are they still a big deal now that we're getting a new stadium? Jeremy, go!
What's up, guys? Hey, this is exactly where having poor leadership in Summit County and Cleveland, they dropped the ball on this. Because if they were smart and didn't decide to fight a losing battle from the beginning and trying to show that they were tough guys to stand up to the billionaire, they would have said, all right, we'll get on board, but we have some stipulations. We want you to take care of the fans. We want you to limit things like PSLs. We want you to limit price. We want, you know, price-protected seats so the regular fan can go. But now that stuff's all gone. Because they decided to try to be tough guys and show Cleveland all how they're going to stand up to the big, bad, rich guy. So now there's no room for any of this negotiation. And this isn't something that hasn't happened. When they built the Pontiac Silverdome, they used government money, and that's exactly what they did. They made certain lower-level seats capped at $15 so the regular fan could go to the game.
So, Jeremy, I understand that. In a perfect world, that would have been amazing. And certainly you wouldn't expect that to come from Brook Park, because they're going to do anything they can to get the stadium. So you wouldn't expect their mayor to fight for that.
Right. So Cauga County jumps in and says, all right, we see what's going on here. We know we can't win this. Let's get together, work. We'll get you some money, but you need to do this to protect the fans and the regular people. That's the job they could have done. Now, they either don't have the intelligence, foresight, maybe it's that, maybe they just didn't think of that, but I just think that's something they should have done as leaders. Is, you know what, they bought the land, it's going to happen, they're moving 9 miles down the road, don't pretend like they're moving to another state and try to enact the Modell Law, all this stuff. Instead, they tried to be the tough guy, and this is what happens. Now, that all being said, I have a pretty good source pretty high up in the Browns organization that says that they have not decided on PSLs, especially not for regular seats, and there will be options available for season ticket holders without PSLs. Now, obviously, that's all subject to change.
From your lips to God's ears, Jeremy.
So they also sent out, and that's the thing. Sources. I know some guys cherry picked the they sent out, you know, I am a season ticket holder. Congratulations on all my success.
Yeah. Congratulations.
But they Stamp sent out, patio. I've seen that. It.
Yeah, it's true.
They sent out a fan survey. And some guys cherry picked, you know, some of the big accounts on Twitter cherry picked the high end ones. But there were affordable tickets. You know, there was affordable.
Jeremy, more importantly, what's Murkowski going to do today?
Okay, that's enough. Goodbye, Jeremy.
Thank you. I want to hear.
We're not doing that.
Just carry it on Twitter.
I knew Jeremy in Akron was doing well. I didn't know he was doing stamp patio.
Hello.
I did not know that. Congratulations again on all your success.
Is that something we need to bring to the podcast?
What?
Once you get Stamp Patio, is that the official sign?
Yeah, that's a different level. Yeah, you're better than anybody else in the neighborhood. You got Stamp Patio. But usually if you're living in a neighborhood like that, everybody has Stamp Patios. Where can you get a Stamp Patio taken care of for you? With all the great trimmings that you could want, with 0% financing until 2027, Extend Technologies. And they present the emerging podcast scene on 92.3 The Fan Extra on the Free Odyssey app, coming up at 10:15 a.m. Eastern. Big thanks to Nick Barlage, CEO, Rock Entertainment, Cleveland Cavaliers. They're doing well. I bet Nick has a Stamp Patio. Bet he's got one. We're back tomorrow, 6 to 10, for Big Country, for Jeff, for Mitch, for the Slippery Wizard, Anthony Lima. I'm Ken Carman. Have a wonderful day, my friend.
She's with us on a Wednesday because we had stuff that happened yesterday, and she said, sure, guys, I'll join you on Wednesday. She's Mary Kay Cabot. Hello, Mary Kay.
Hi, Mary Kay.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We are fine. How are you? Because this is your time to relax a little bit before you know what really happens.
Oh, it's great. It's really so much fun to catch my breath here and spend some time with the family and enjoy the holiday. So, yeah, having a great time. Thanks.
Mary Kay, obviously big news from the state legislature, the governor giving the money to put this thing over the top to get the dome moving towards 2029. Have you been consulted on what the press box should look like?
Yeah.
Not yet, but I actually hope that they do that. The press boxes where teams have consulted with the local writers turn out to be some of the best ones. So hopefully they will do that.
Hmm. Your thoughts on moving into a dome?
Well, it's going to be different. It's going to be really different. I'm going to have to give up my love for looking out. Now, it's easy for me to say from the press box, but I do sometimes love to look out at a snow game and see Jameis Winston making snow angels and different things like that. And Kareem Hunt, the time that he talked about how there were four different seasons that happened in the course of a football game. You know, there's just funny things that happen like that that are related to being outdoors and to the weather. And then I was just posting some pictures. It's my anniversary today, by the way.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Nice.
Yeah, thanks. My wedding anniversary. And I was just posting some pictures, and I have one of my husband and I from a hotel room with the stadium in the background on the lake. So I'm going to feel somewhat nostalgic about all of that kind of stuff. But I'm also for progress in a city. And, you know, the Haslams and the Browns are convinced that this will be transformational for our region. And I'm excited about that because I'm so pro Cleveland. I'm so pro this area. Hopefully our lakefront will get developed and there will be some exciting things there. And this will turn out to be something really, really great for Cleveland. That's my hope because, again, this is my hometown. This is where I grew up. I absolutely love it here. And I want nothing more than everything to be wonderful for this entire region.
Hear, hear. Woo-hoo. We couldn't agree with you more. And so we're looking forward to seeing what happens. In the meantime, we have a lot of games to play in the old place with a team that needs some help right now. As we sit back and look at things and get ready for this season, the more national stuff you keep hearing, Mary Kay, the less the national folks think of this team's chances. Do you feel this is a rebuild, or do you think they're trying to? Because if they're trying to rebuild, they're not vocalizing that thought. Yet, you've got four quarterbacks and you don't know which one's your starting quarterback, which screams rebuild or keep your fingers crossed to 2026.
Well, I think if it were a rebuild, they would have traded Myles Garrett. They had an opportunity to really maximize their ability to be in great shape for the future, and they didn't do that. So I think that says that they are trying to win now as much as they possibly can and just continue to establish or try to continue to establish a culture of winning. You look over at the Steelers, they don't have these years where they win two games or three games or four games. They continuously win football games. That's what the Browns want to do. You don't establish that culture by tanking or losing or any of those things. So I certainly don't think they're trying to do that. I think they want to win as many games as possible. And if you look at this roster, there are a lot of good players that are still on this roster. You look at the Miles Garretts, the Denzel Wards, the Grant Delpits, Martin Emerson, Joel Bitonio, Jack Conklin, David Njoku, Jerry Jeudy. The list kind of goes on and on there. There are a lot of Pro Bowlers on this football team, and I do not see a rebuild here.
Yeah, Mary Kay, I've struggled with that too when people are saying, well, they're playing for the draft next year. They got two first-round picks. They're hoping to, you know, that's when they're going to get their quarterback. Don't you really think the answer, the question to this season, though, has got to be who will be their starting quarterback in 2026, and do they need to go draft another one? It bothers me when people say, well, they're not playing to win this year, and I'm hoping that one of these four guys can help them win.
Well, the thing is, players, Browns players even told us after the season was over, we feel like we are a quarterback away from winning. And what we don't know yet is, have the Browns landed that quarterback for this season that they can actually go out and win with? Now, we know that they won with Joe Flacco 2 years ago, but, you know, that wasn't the toughest part of the schedule. He's a couple of years older now. So is he going to be able to go out there and win for them and not turn the ball over? We're not sure about that yet. And then Kenny Pickett, they believe that he can be something special, that he can be more than what he's been able to show so far, that he can be their version of a Sam Darnold or someone like that, a Jared Goff that excelled in their second or third chance. Can he be that? We don't know. And then the rookies, I don't think they're ready yet to start the season. We may see them in the second half of the season. So I think it's going to come down to either Joe or Kenny in the first part of the season. And that's the big question mark. Can they win with the Browns this season?
Mary Kay Cabot joining us from the Plain Dealer in Cleveland.com. Are you comfortable that the offensive line is good to go? You know, my fingers are crossed about their health, Mary Kay, but everybody seems to be healthy, and I'm not thinking about DeJuan Jones even there. I'm thinking of the four older guys on the right side of DeJuan Jones. Everybody seem healthy and good to go?
Yeah, they certainly seem to be healthy and good to go. I think Jack Conklin, another year out from a major knee surgery, I think he'll even be stronger than he was. I was looking at some offensive line rankings the other day, and I can't remember even who it was. I don't know if it was Pro Football Focus or if it was CBS or ESPN. I'm not sure who it was, but they had the Browns at number 22 in offensive line. Well, when I look at that offensive line, I see three All-Pros. And how many football teams can say they have three All-Pros on their offensive line? So three All-Pros, a good center in Ethan Posick, and then DeJuan trying to nail down that left tackle job. So I don't think it's 22nd. I think I would probably put it in at least the top 12. So I think they're probably a little bit better than some people think they are.
We have this debate about wide receiver a lot here because Jeff thinks that they're what's the best? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Lacking.
And I tend to agree with him. But can Deontay Johnson, Jerry Jeudy, and then Cedric Tillman give you a good base just to at least have three guys you know you can go in the season, and then we'll see what happens with the rest? Can you feel confident going into the season with those three, or am I mixing my names up?
Well, I don't know that I would put Deontay Johnson as the number two with Jerry. I would put Ced there.
Okay.
So I think you're more so talking about Jerry, Ced. I think they're excited about what Jamari can bring to the table. They'll have to see how things go with Deontay Johnson. They have some other young guys that they like. But I do think that they could have used one more good receiver. But here's the thing. They are looking at it globally, and they feel that when they added Harold Fannin, they basically added to their pass-catching core. So that's why they're not looking at it really the same way that we are, and looking just at the receiver room per se and saying, uh-oh, it looks a little short. They've got David Njoku. They've got Harold Fannin, and this is going to be a very two tight end heavy offense, and sometimes three tight ends. So there might be times where it's hard to even get two wide receivers on the field at the same time. So as long as Jerry Jeudy stays healthy, and that's going to be the key, they should be okay with what they're trying to do with their passing game. But I would still be on the lookout for one more really good receiver.
Mary Kay, do you really believe Deshaun could be back by October?
Well, you know, there's so many things. Here's the thing that happens nowadays when you try to write something. People kind of blow things out of proportion, and people take things a little out of context. Mm-hmm. And the line in the column that I wrote about Deshaun Watson was that, you know, some sources believe that he could possibly be ready to practice by October, but it remains to be seen if the Browns would even think about activating him that soon, so quickly after his second Achilles surgery. So, you know, there is some thought. I think that Deshaun is probably optimistic that he can get out there and do that. We know that he is throwing the ball now to some receivers inside the field house. But I think that one, you know, the part about how it remains to be seen if the Browns would even entertain the notion at all, that never got out there anywhere. You know, when people aggregated what I wrote. So that's just something that we all have to deal with nowadays, is just the way people aggregate your work. And sometimes it's not always how we portrayed it.
Good. I'm glad you got a chance to clear that up.
Let me throw out two scenarios for you. Let's say he is healthy at some point mid-season, maybe, you know, whatever, 9-10 games in, but somebody is playing well at quarterback. Does Deshaun ever see the field? And then let's flip it. If nobody has played well at quarterback, would he see the field?
I think it's an enormous, enormous long shot for him to see the field at all this year. I really do. I just don't really see it, because right now they've got four quarterbacks who are vying for playing time. And I would think that you'd probably have to blow through all four of those before you would get to putting Deshaun on the field. So unless something really drastic happens, I don't envision it this year. It's very, very soon after a revision of an Achilles surgery, and I think that they will probably proceed with caution.
All right, so we continue on with we're either going to say five or four in that quarterback, although Deshaun's going to be around the quarterback room the whole time. It's not like, right, as he was before. I mean, he's still in the group. And, you know, when they talk about him, during press conferences, it sounds like he's still very active and very involved too. So, correct? I'm not wrong on that, am I?
No, he is. He's very involved. He's in the meeting rooms. He's been watching some practice. He's helping the two young guys a lot. You know, just trying to get up to speed in the offense and with their terminology and pointing things out. And he's done a really, really nice job with that, to the point where the Browns are very, very happy with him in that regard. But he will start the season on the physically unable to perform list. I had that in the story that I wrote the other day. So right. Yes, he has to miss a minimum of four games, and then they have a 5-week window in which they decide whether or not to activate him after that for practice, not activate him, open his practice window for the next 5 weeks. And when they open the practice window, then they've got 21 days in which to decide whether or not to actually activate him to the roster. So there's a lot of time. They can max out at like 9 weeks or something like that. So there is a world in which he could be on the active roster just procedurally late November, early December, but that doesn't mean that it's going to happen.
Happy anniversary to you and your hubby.
Yes,
and thank you for your time.
Go have a nice dinner tonight.
I'm plan to do that. Thank
charge
you
it,
very much.
Charge it to cleveland.com.
Don't know. I was going to charge it to 92.3.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Oh, there's plenty of 92.3s across the country. Knock yourself out.
Send it to Andy. Thank you, Mary Kay.
Thanks, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
This guy hits it. He knows it. He understands it. He is Warren Sharp. And, of course, you can always catch his stuff at sharpfootballanalysis.com. And right now, Warren is on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Warren, how are you, my man?
And I'm doing so good now that this football preview is out to people, and I don't have to worry about what I'm going to write about anymore for all of these teams.
I get that. You do this every year. It's a huge football preview. The sharpfootball.com, the book, it's terrific football preview. It's out now. Before you get into it, where can people get it?
Yeah, well, first of all, we're doing a special deal for you guys only. We just launched this today. It's 586 pages of analysis and predictions about the upcoming season. It's broken out into 32 team chapters, one for every single team. The place to go is sharp.football. If you go to sharp.football, you're going to see a link to purchase the book. The book is going for $30, but just for your station, you're the only station I'm doing a hit today on the day that we're releasing this book.
Cool.
We are giving it to anybody for $1. $1 if you enter the coupon code Browns when you go to check out. If you check out with the code Browns, instead of paying $30, you're getting this book for $1. It's got, I think, 17 or 18 pages on just the Browns, and then there's 586 total pages. 31 other teams covered as well, along with all of my season predictions and what I think is going to happen around the league this year.
That's outstanding.
That's really cool. What's the, again, Browns is the code word, right?
Yeah, use the coupon code Browns and go to sharp.football, and that's how you can get your hands on a copy of it. It just came out literally less than 1 hour ago, and we work on it for months. I've got a team of people. I put the whole thing together over the course of starting in March, and it's a true labor of love, but certainly happy to talk to you guys about the Browns today. You guys have a busy day up there with some of the news that's been going on about your stadium as well.
Yeah, let's go. I'll come back. We've been talking about the stadium all day. I want to talk about quarterbacks because it's way more fun than hearing people complain about the fact they're moving out of downtown. But we do think it's a great thing. Jeff and I both talked about just as far as having venues and pumping all this just energy into the stadium. I'm just going to say money, but energy into Northeast Ohio. What are your thoughts on the Browns trying to go at this with four quarterbacks?
I think it's very unique. I don't know that it's going to work, but the good thing is that, you know, look, you almost have to separate Kevin Stefanski from this, because if you're thinking about the Browns long term, they roll the dice on two mid to late round quarterbacks who slipped in the draft a little bit, and we're going to see if either of these guys, they might have got a diamond in the rough somewhere along the way. They've got time to figure it out, and maybe they'll figure it out and find that they've got a guy. And if they don't, hopefully, for your sake, they lose a ton of games this year, and they're right back at the top of the draft next year with extra draft capital and the ability to land that franchise quarterback that you should so desperately need. And the thing I wrote about in my book about the Cleveland Browns is, you know, I don't mean to be mean, but sort of a laughing stock with the whole Deshaun Watson situation and how you got him and he's terrible and then all the other issues that came about as a result of all of that and how expensive he is and the cap hit and all this type of stuff. But at the root of all of that is the actual correct understanding that quarterback is massively important. And at times it's important to take a risk to try to get a quarterback. And right or wrong, obviously at this point it's wrong. They went after Deshaun Watson, but it was a major risk for them to do that. It shows how much they actually value the position. And it's part of the reason why I do think that they went ahead and drafted two quarterbacks in the same draft class. And it's part of the reason I think that they're comfortable if the team stinks next year, if neither of those two guys are your guy, because you don't want to have Kenny Pickett going out and winning games for you. You don't want to have Joe Flacco going out and winning games for you. I mean, I'm just talking, I don't know what you guys personally want, but if I was rooting for the long-term future, if I lived in Cleveland and I wanted this team to eventually be good several years from now, I don't want Flacco or Pickett winning games for me. I'd rather they play as little as possible or lose what the games that they're playing, and I want to see what these younger guys have, and if they have nothing, fine, we'll pick high next year.
Okay, Warren, you're killing me. But you know what?
You disagree? You have a different opinion?
Well,
or?
I get it. I wonder, and give me your thoughts. Do you think Pickett or Gabriel or Sanders has any kind of a legit chance of being a starting quarterback in this league for the next 5 or 6 years, and in particular with this franchise?
Absolutely not on Pickett. I've seen enough on Kenny Pickett. We've seen Kenny Pickett. The main time that he's had success, obviously, was there in Pittsburgh. But, you know, he's got deficiencies as a quarterback. We know he wears gloves even in the middle of the summer. His hands aren't that large. He struggles in a lot of situations. And Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers threw a good defense and just ridiculous loads of luck and sorcery end up winning games. I don't think Kenny Pickett he's suddenly willing this team to win. I think the team is winning despite Kenny Pickett being there rather than because of Kenny Pickett being there. I don't think he is a NFL franchise quarterback whatsoever. As it relates to Gabriel or Sanders, I honestly don't know. I'm going to find out when we see him in camp. I know it's probably news and topics for discussion about like how many incompletions or completions they throw and mini camps and stuff. Like, I know that's discussion points, but I want to actually see the guys out there on the field. I want to see them in some of the games. You know, there are definitely some positives about each of these guys coming out of school, but there's a lot of negatives as well about both of them. And it remains to be seen how they translate, how their style translates into the NFL. And so I'm sort of going to reserve judgment. But I would like to, as long as they're not going to embarrass the team or potentially embarrass them, like massively get injured in some capacity because they're just not ready, I would love to see Stefanski get these guys some real live action early on in the 2025 season. One of them, you know, whichever one is the better guy, and let's see what he can actually do, because that's really, maybe you don't start in week one, but you got to get these guys in there and see, because if they struggle, then you're going to get a good pick next year. And that's really at the end of the day, that's what the 2025 season is all about for you, in my opinion, what it should be about. It's not about winning the Super Bowl. It's not about winning the AFC North. It's not about finishing with a winning record. It's about ensuring that we are locking up a franchise quarterback moving forward. I can't tell you, I posted a stat the other week. When was the last time you guys won the AFC North? I mean, let alone did anything in the playoffs. Like, you guys have to get that franchise quarterback in order to do anything in the future. And that's what this season has to be about, is either, yes, we got one, we found a diamond in the rough here, or no, we didn't, we're going to draft one at the very top of next year's draft.
But I think the harder part is you got a coaching staff that's probably wondering, are we going to be around for next year if we have if we have that horrible? This is such a catch-22 when you try to figure out, okay, well, if they don't win, it's okay, but is it? Especially if you're a coaching staff that has to go out there and try to win every week.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm in the firm opinion, and like, look at what we saw last year with the New York Giants. I don't know if Brian Daboll was quote unquote on the hot seat or what was going on, but there wasn't a direct line of communication clearly between Mara and Daboll, and they go out there and win a totally meaningless week 16 game. And as a result of winning, sorry, it was week 17. Mm-hmm. Now that we've got 18 weeks, win that game. And as a result of that, they cost themselves the number one overall draft pick. If they had lost that game and lost week 18, they get the number one overall draft pick. They win this game. They miss out on it, even though they're starting Drew Lock, et cetera. So you have to have some sort of level of communication. I believe that if I'm ownership, I still think Kevin Stefanski, look at the quarterbacks that he's been dealt. Kevin Stefanski did not go out there and sign Deshaun Watson, right? We know where that decision came from. Kevin Stefanski has been asked to coach Deshaun Watson, to change his offense massively, to tailor it towards what Deshaun Watson likes to do, which is totally opposite directly what Kevin Stefanski had previously done when he was in Minnesota and initially in Cleveland, which is multiple tight ends, heavier personnel, lots of play action, under center stuff. He had to change so much to appease Deshaun Watson's style of play. Then Deshaun Watson is playing terrible. He goes in and out with injuries. He's juggling millions of quarterbacks throughout the course of the season. The team is not losing because Kevin Stefanski is a bad coach. So I believe Kevin Stefanski, I don't know that he's earned. He just hasn't lost the opportunity to continue coaching the Cleveland Browns in 2026, regardless of what happens this year. You need to give him a quarterback and let him see what he can do with this, with said quarterback. So I agree. And frankly, I think that the decision with the coaching staff and the ownership should be on the same page quite early on in this season to figure out what our strategy is going to be. I don't think they know through like the first 4 weeks what their strategy is going to be. But what I can tell you is this: the Cleveland Browns play the number one most difficult schedule in the entire NFL, weeks 1 to 4. You're playing the Cincinnati Bengals, the Baltimore Ravens, the Green Bay Packers, and the Detroit Lions. Four teams that are all expected to go to the playoffs this year. Four teams that have winning records. These are four of the better teams in the NFL from top to bottom. That is going to be a gauntlet. And so you're going to be sitting there heading into an international game against Brian Flores' defense of the Minnesota Vikings, potentially 0-4, maybe 1-3, and looking at what the landscape is before you. But I just hope that they allow Kevin Stefanski to keep going beyond this year, because he hasn't been able to prove anything with the quarterbacks he's been dealt.
Warren Sharp joining us, sharpfootballanalysis.com, the website, his book out right now. And it's a biggie, the 2025 football preview. A coupon code, type in Browns, you can get a great deal on it, as Warren laid out earlier. The quarterback situation, obviously, they're looking for something. The running back situation is different here. Nick Chubb not brought back. They draft two. What do you think of the running back situation here with Judkins and Sampson and no Nick Chubb?
I like the running back situation. Running backs obviously are very predicated in terms of how strong the offensive line is going to be. So that's kind of the first and foremost thing that needs to be set for the Cleveland Browns. But the run game obviously was terrible last year, and it's going to be leaned upon heavily with this cadre of quarterbacks. There's no doubt about it. I like what Judkins brings to this rushing attack. I think he brings another dynamic, obviously from Ohio State, local to that area in terms of where he played at college. I am expecting the Cleveland Browns rushing attack to be leaned on quite heavily, and they're going to have to step up this upcoming season. The good news is Cleveland Browns have the ability, I think, to lean on this run game a little bit to help support the quarterback. The bad news is I'm expecting you guys to play the ninth toughest schedule of run defenses this upcoming season. So it's not going to be easy in terms of who you're going to face. But the main thing, and I write about this a lot in the Browns chapter, which is why the run game needs to be better on first down, and all aspects of your first down offense need to be better, is because your guys' first down offense was so miserable last season. It impacted everything else, and it forced you into playing the longest distance to go on third downs, which there's no bigger factor in whether or not you're going to convert on a third down based upon your distance to go. And so because your first down offense was terrible, you had the longest distance to go on third down. What was wrong with your first down offense? Well, EPA per rush, you were dead last. Rushing success rate, you were second to worst. Passing success rate, you were dead last. And EPA per pass attempt, you were dead last. So whatever run plays that Kevin Stefanski dials up on first and 10 have to be a little bit more productive than what they were last season, because you guys must get some edges on first down. The cascading effect last year was you faced long distances to go on third down, and you were forced into a lot of third downs. You punted at the second highest rate of any offense in the NFL. You made trips into the red zone at the lowest rate because you were punting at the highest rate. You didn't score on many drives. You ranked 32nd in points per drive. You ranked 32nd in points per game. All of these things are building on one another. And you had the 31st average halftime lead, so you were falling behind at halftime. And as a result, you didn't win any games. You ranked dead last in number of games won last year. So everything can be traced back to first down efficiency, in my opinion, where you guys were the worst in the NFL. It sounds simple, but that's where it starts and ends, in my opinion. Fix your first down offense in some degree, and everything else can improve a little bit. If your first down offense is terrible and you can't run the ball on first down, you're going to see a similar result in 2025 as you did last year.
All right, Warren. You're killing me here, but I can't disagree with anything you're saying. I'm not looking for sunshine. I'm looking for maybe anything we haven't thought of. Is there anything they can do with Deshaun Watson other than pay him for the next 2 years?
I don't think so. Didn't I see some report that he might come back earlier than planned? Yesterday, maybe.
And could that be good? Could he possibly find what he had in Houston? We're hard pressed to think the answer to that is yes.
I agree with you. I'm sorry. I'm here on a great day for the book, and you guys get the new stadium, and I'm just dumping on negativity here, but.
The stadium looks really good, though, Warren. That stadium design
looks
great.
It looks outstanding, absolutely. But I will say what doesn't look great is the prospects for Deshaun Watson. I just think quarterback, you cannot separate a quarterback from his play caller, but it's also hard to separate a quarterback, like statistically, from his own level of confidence. And no matter when you see Deshaun Watson out there, his confidence is shattered. Like, I do not think that he believes in himself, in his own ability to go out there and perform well. And that is visible when he's out there on the field. And I just don't think he can execute Stefanski's offense. And Stefanski, like I said at the top, he has changed his style of play calling to try to appease Deshaun Watkins. I think Stefanski is not elite when he calls plays in this 11 personnel shotgun. I don't think he's as good in this style of offense as he was when he was utilizing those heavier sets and under center and play action, etc. And I don't know that he wants to be doing this, but he's doing it because this is the hand that he's been dealt. I think the offense is therefore, you've got a head coach and a play caller who's not at his best trying to work with a quarterback who has no confidence, whose talent has obviously dropped off a ton as well, and who's been injured multiple times now and sat out a lot from football. It's just a recipe for disaster, in my opinion, in terms of what Deshaun Watson might be able to bring to the table for you guys. So the cap is terrible. The way that you deferred the cap to future years and now have this ridiculous cap hit in 2026 is also terrible. I don't know the long-term answer. What I would just rather do is just rip it off like a Band-Aid. And I wrote in my preview, I'm tired of thinking about Deshaun Watson. I'm tired of talking about Deshaun Watson. The sooner he's away from the Cleveland Browns and probably just done from the NFL entirely, the better that it is for everybody, the healthier it is for everybody, because I don't think he's an NFL caliber quarterback, but unfortunately he's like that millstone that's hanging around your guy's neck from a salary cap perspective for a little bit longer.
It's like the second apron in the NBA. They're one and the same. That's the way the Cavaliers feel about it too. So, hey, we do appreciate you, Warren. Thank you so much. Again, tell everybody what a good deal you can get just by listening to you today on our station.
A 586-page football preview dropped today at noon Eastern. You can get it for just $1 instead of $30. Go to sharp.football, enter the coupon code Browns, and it's yours for $1, limited time only. Hopefully you guys, you might not like what you read about the Cleveland Browns, but it's all honest. And then you'll find some other things about some of the other teams. And hey, I am not too kind about the Cincinnati Bengals either. So if you just don't feel good about the Browns, but you also want to feel happy because I don't like the Cincinnati Bengals this year, go ahead and read their chapter.
Hey, you want to see more Browns? If you want to see more Browns fans, just say one bad thing about the Steelers in less than 5 seconds. Say one bad thing and you'll get 100 more people probably from the Browns that'll want to hop in onto that. So thank you. Hey, Warren, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Thanks, take Warren. Care. All right, right now we're talking about the Browns to Brook Park because it's all but done. And so I want to play this clip for you, a couple clips. Jimmy Haslam is speaking. I'm a little upset that they named it Brownstown because it's for the longest time that I've pitched the idea of Brook Park to just people out there that would listen. I've always called it Browns Disneyland. Now, obviously, trademark reasons, they're not going to call it Browns Disneyland. That's absurd. But like it encompasses the general idea. And like part of the pitch that I've always had is I've used a couple different places to kind of just go off of. Like, for instance, I've always used St. Louis and what happens at Busch Stadium. I stayed at a hotel across the street from Busch Stadium once. I went to school out there in St. Louis.
Yeah.
But I went back for some reason and I needed to stay at a hotel. And so I stayed at this hotel that was across the street from Busch Stadium. And when you went to the different floors, everything was like it looked like a Cardinals team shop threw up in it. Like, it was impressive. But, like, down to the numbers, for instance. So, if you went to, whatever 4-9, you know, like 19, let's say, then whatever Cardinals player was the most prominent 19 was then a big photo of them right on the wall as you walked off the, you know, the elevator. Like, but things like that was
everywhere. And that's what I've always envisioned, kind of like that idea, Brown's Disneyland, where everything is, you have hotels, you have a Bernie Kosar steakhouse, maybe you have a Brian Sipe cigar lounge, I don't know, like we'll come up with things, but everywhere
like
you turn.
Jerome Bettis has like a restaurant in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and everywhere you turn is just different Browns restaurants for their players, different hotels that are themed in Browns way, and everything is just basically one big homage to being the Cleveland Browns, and it sounds like they're going to get it, and that's and Haslam's naming it Brownstown. Do I love the name? Don't love the name necessarily, but I get what he's going for.
Yeah, and apparently there's a podcast associated with this that's called like Building Brownstown.
Which is another thing. So we have 10 episodes?
10 episodes where they're going to...
Wait, are 10 episodes released or are we doing just 10 total episodes?
I think it's like 10 total episodes. So I think just one's been, I don't even know if one's been released yet. I didn't look into this.
Are we doing like one every 6 months until we actually get the thing? So, the thing's still 4 years away.
So here's the thing. I think that, I think the name is, you know, we can laugh about it, whatever. And I also think there's something funny about like, we say everybody has a podcast and now Jimmy Haslam of all people is like starting to enter this podcast sphere with this 10 episode podcast about the Brown Stadium. So there is something comical about that, but I actually think this is maybe a good move for him. Like, I guess we'll see how it pays off.
Well,
but
hold on now. Why say maybe?
The idea.
Say it with your chest. Say it with conviction.
Okay, I think it's.
You like this idea.
I think it's a good idea because the conversation we just had in the first segment, JP, like we know there's a lot of sentiments for this team playing downtown, the stadium being downtown and all this. I think maybe the way that you ease those emotions from fans and like sell them on the idea. Now there's just gonna be some people who are like that we hate Jimmy Haslam, we're not gonna listen to anything he says, we don't like this project. Sure, they'll just write it off from the start. But if he's trying to like sell you on why this works and what they're doing, doing something like a podcast does make you seem more relatable. I mean, it's like PR 101, like make yourself relatable, do something that people want to listen to and like share your perspective on things. And so I kind of like the idea of him doing it in this way where they'll roll out 10 episodes and give you like, here's what our big plan is for this. The Dog Pound's going to be one story. I saw this on social media today. Like the Dog Pound's going to be like one story of just like this very steep thing. And the Dog Pound fans all be excited. And like, so they go like section by section of like everything they're doing and break it all down, explain it to fans in a way where they can really maybe connect to what's being built for them. I think maybe that helps the process of selling this more to people who obviously are against the team moving out of downtown.
I guess I want to hear from people that are just upset with this or maybe not pleased. I feel like maybe I just live in my own bubble, Spencer, but I feel like I talked to a lot of people like yourself that seem like this is an exciting time and seem like this is a good thing. Once you get past the idea, you know, and we talked about the actual football ramifications of this. Once you lock in to the idea of all the good this is going to bring Northeast Ohio, I think I just don't know why people would be upset. Even like, and I'm not going to get political here because it's just not really what I care to do, but even when it comes down to the amount of money that is being loaned to Jimmy Haslam, it's $600 million. It's a lot of money, but he's going to be able to pay that back with some of the taxes generated through this whole Brownstown venture, through the taxes on the hotels, through the taxes on the restaurants, through the taxes on what you end up buying while you're around there. And I feel like it's just not, I can't find the loss here. But I know people are going to find the loss in every possible way because that's just how we operate when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, my read, and I could be way off here, but like as we've had so much time to talk about this and like process it at this point, from people that I'm friends with or people that I know that are like diehard Browns fans and even ones that want the team to be downtown, it's felt like this gradual process of acceptance, if you will, where it started as I really don't want them to leave downtown. Can't they explore other options? And then as you saw more of the renderings and they gave you more of like a intuitive like perspective on like, hey, here's what everything that's happening and here's what it's going to look like and here's why we're doing this and downtown isn't feasible for these reasons. I do feel like people that I know have come around to it where they're like, I think this is probably for the best. There are a lot of people who I think I think that if you, and I could be wrong here, but my guess is like if you polled people like, would you rather watch football games like outside in the elements or in a dome? I'm going to guess that there's a majority of people in like Cleveland that actually care about the Browns and go to games that would say they'd rather watch in a dome. Whether the state, they might still want the stadium downtown, but they prefer like the controlled climate environment, which it just makes the viewing experience better, right? Like I know that last year the snow globe game against the Steelers was like a really cool, unique thing that people can always look back at and tell their kids about, but that's like a one-off. You get one of those games maybe like every like 7 years potentially. So
My read on it has been that I think people have come around to it more and more and are more accepting of this being the path forward. Yeah. But I could be completely wrong about that, where people are just still very entrenched I'm mad that this is happening.
I remember at the beginning of this, now this was 2 years ago that I did the Jewish news panel. I did one this last year as well, but I did it 2 years ago, and it was the early stage of this, and I'll never forget. They asked, Baskin was right there. He can attest to this. I went on this big campaign for putting a stadium in Brook Park. And then Baskin was like, how many of you guys agree with this? Room of about 100 guys, right? And only four raised their hands. Like, I hope that number's come back around. And maybe what you're saying is true, where it's become more and more accepting. I feel like what started out was maybe me being on an island on this one has slowly graduated into more and more people as we've knocked down some of the arguments that would come against it. Maybe sometimes people just need to see it happen in reality, though. And maybe that's the truth of it. It just seeing it come to fruition is what people actually needed.
Yeah, it's a lot of like hearsay right now and just guessing. Like when you see the complex that's going to come with it and all the storefronts and things that are supposed to be associated with this, it's easy for people to just sit there and write it off and be like, who's going to go to Brook Park to do these things? But
And on that point, too, another thing I keep hearing is like, oh, it's going to be so expensive. We're going to be priced out now. It's like, what, have you guys been to a Browns game already? Like, have you guys paid attention to the prices that these things already are?
And I don't know.
The people that are trying to go to these games that don't have enough money aren't going to these games already.
The parking's been another one. Oh, we're going to get priced out of parking. It's going to be so expensive to park over there, which, first of all, they're apparently going to connect the Rapid there. So that makes things a little bit easier for people if they want to park somewhere else and get on the Rapid, even if it's like two stops away. But at the same time, like, you are going to get priced out of parking and seats and all this stuff. If they built the dome downtown or they built the dome somewhere else, like that's just the nature of where the NFL is going.
Half of the fan base already can't afford these tickets. Right. And just talking for the stadiums this year,
Bills fans were up in arms when their PSL stuff was all released, like over the last couple of years, it's going to be the same exact thing. And we're going to have to sort of combat that and deal with that. But I don't know why these people think that like the stadium I guess the only way it would have stayed what it is if it's like, we're just going to put more money into the stadium that we know is just putting lipstick on the pig, as Daryl's talked about a number of times. Mm-hmm. That's the only way maybe things would have stayed like relatively status quo. But if you wanted a new stadium somewhere, even if it was downtown, it was still going to do this with the prices.
All right, here was Jimmy Haslam on the Brownstown podcast. Here we go.
Building this dome facility, we'll go from having 10 events a year in our current stadium to having all kinds of events. And I mean, I think it's really important for everybody to understand that, yes, there'll be 10 NFL games and hopefully more, but there'll also be a chance to have national championship games in football, Final Four games in basketball, men's and women's. There'll be a chance to have the Sweet 16 here. The Women's World Cup has come to the U.S. in 31. We will put in a bid for that. So you have to think big and broad. All the concerts that we've missed that go to Detroit or go somewhere else, Indianapolis, will now come here. So it is going to be transformational.
I love how he's just talking about poaching all the ones from Indy. He's like, they'll just come here now. It's just what's going to happen. And you know what? The way that we have it with Destination Cleveland, he's probably not wrong. They get everything. If they ask for it, they get it.
Not to mention Big Ten championships, too.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be able to have it's going to be a bunch of things now coming. There's no one that can deny that part of this. 216-474-0092. We did ask, though. I wanted the people that aren't happy with this one. Mark is not thrilled. What's up, Mark?
Hey, guys. Just in the car right now, I was listening. Here's my biggest thing as a season ticket holder from our family back into the 70s and 80s. Going into this new stadium, they want to talk about how this is a big privately funded facility, but yet we're going to get slammed with PSLs, and I think the guy on here earlier just talked about it. But I've already owned our season.
Mark, I'm sorry, man. You're breaking up. I think I got where you're going, though, with the PSLs. And I've told you this before, Spencer. I got a family member on Elisa's side has Bills season tickets, and the PSL, it's like $25,000.
That's ridiculous.
He shares season tickets, so he's not going to just do all that up, you know, one lump sum. But he was debating it. It's like, is this something I want to do now? $25,000. Do I just say no thank you anymore and just buy it individually if I want to go to games?
I think Ken and Lima hit on this earlier this morning, the idea that like a lot of those tickets could just be bought up by like corporations who like then distribute them to workers and things. That's probably the direction that it does trend. Like PSLs definitely are a burden on fans, and I understand why. Unfortunately, those are going to be unavoidable, I think, no matter what their plans were for a new stadium. Like, that's just the way that it's gone. And maybe at some point they can get rid of them. Like, the Haslams, when they first bought the team, The stadium downtown right now had PSLs on it, and they just got rid of them. Mm-hmm. So maybe we get to a point where that happens, but you got to remember, like, these owners aren't building these stadiums to not make money on it in some way, and the PSLs are a big part of that. They got to pay a lot of money back to the state now. They're going to have to pay money back to in these bonds that they get from the city. So they're going to make money on it. And unfortunately, I see why it can be pretty dilapidating for fans. Like, they just feel like every way they look, they're getting hit with more money. They got to pump into it themselves. But it's just the direction things have gone, unfortunately.
We've got another shakeup in the East. We'll explore it next in Quick Hits. It's Jonathan Pito and Spencer German Afternoon Drive with you guys right here on The Fan.
It's funny because, like, for for Locked On, they tell you, like, yeah, engage with your commenters. It's good for the community.
Yeah.
And then, like, I start engaging with them, and then I just become a person that I don't want to become. And I'm like, I can't do this.
Are they mean on YouTube? I haven't noticed many mean people on YouTube. I feel like YouTube's more real than anything.
It's always a mix, but I think right now, because of the nature of the show that I do is based off of the Browns, you get the crazy Shador fans. And so, like, if you say anything...
Yeah, but you're a Shador supporter. I'm a Shador supporter.
You're telling me.
Maybe that's why I'm liking YouTube so much these days.
You're preaching to the choir, JP. I know that I'm a Shador supporter, and I think he's the most talented quarterback on this roster. But for some reason, anytime I just say the phrase, like, he was a fifth-round pick, because he quite literally was a fifth-round pick, people are like, you keep disparaging his name. Like, the people here in the comments, like, bashing me, and they think I'm a hater.
Maybe stop being a hater, and this will all go away.
Makes no sense to
Maybe it's a really make it sure that you stand on Shador's side. Kind of like you did in the first little sentence.
I could use you as a guest appearance on the show. Just to come on and be like, Spencer is a Shador supporter. We have been in this camp together. We're the only two people at the station who have felt this way.
Why don't you give me like 20 minutes to just wax poetic and everything I love about Shador, and then we can just make that one roll.
Yeah, and I'll just echo you. I'll just be like, yeah, I agree with everything you said.
Another good point.
I've been saying that
for
weeks.
Another good point.
Yeah, and then we were on the same page.
They'll leave, and they'll just be like, boy, the two of them just made a lot of really good points. Did they not? I thought it was funny. One time I had, we had Chris in here, Fedor, and I was arguing with Fedor back and forth, and I looked at the comments on YouTube, because it was one of the first videos I think we'd put up of
his
Afternoon Drive on YouTube.
His comments are pretty bad.
Well, no, but it was great, because it was me just loving on Shador, basically, and Chris being just very not that way, and because they didn't know Chris, because when you go on YouTube, you get everyone, right? We'll get back to the Shador conversation we're having in a second, but they don't know everyone. So, like, for instance, if we do something for the station account here, everyone knows Chris's name and everyone knows that's Chris. Same way everyone knows that's me, and they know you know what I look like and everything like that for our station account. But on YouTube, even though it's our account, you get all these people from everywhere. So the insults hurled at Chris was really funny, but then they kept just saying, like, that guy. They'd be like, that guy with the beard is making a bad point. While that guy that's clean shaven, I like what he has to say. And it was just really funny to think of, because there's so many people. You just take yourself out of the bubble that is Cleveland, and there's so many people that have no awareness of me or Chris in any sort of capacity.
I do not want Fedor's comment section. He was on with Earl and I however many weeks ago, and that was like the first time he dropped that big bomb about, like, hey, Darius is the thing you probably have to move if you want to improve the team. And, like, Earl and I had a lot of fun with it. We turned into a great conversation. But then, like, all these people, like, replying to Keith's video were like, this guy is probably not going to show his face around the locker room now that he made these comments. I was like, he's there every day. What are you talking about?
It's his job to be there.
Like, he talks to these guys in person. Like, he doesn't back down from his takes. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, it's Chris Fedor.
Anyway, we're on YouTube is the point. 92.3 The Fan. Go follow. Go like. Go yell at Spencer in the comments. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, I get enough.
And you might yell about this video as... I just did like an inception thing right there where it's like, I'm going to talk about this video as then the video's not posted yet, but as if it's going to be.
You needed to look right in the camera when you said it.
Though. You up there. No, stop it. We're friends, right? We're friends. Yeah, we're friends. So anyway, so Shador, I'm fascinated by the idea that the amount of people that got turned off by Deshaun Watson helping him out and taking on this mentorship role. It's just between Shador or Dylan Gabriel. I don't care where you get good advice from. I don't care where you get a good lesson from. You're telling me Deshaun can't teach them anything about being a quarterback? Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. There just aren't that many people that have had the success. And I know it fell off for Deshaun, obviously. And you can say what you want about him in a personal level, and I won't disagree with much of it. But the point is, he knows a lot about the game of football. And even if he doesn't know a lot necessarily about the game of football, which I believe he does, he knows a lot about what it is to be a franchise quarterback, to be the person that has to go up to the podium after each game and be responsible for what happened during the game and being able to talk that out. All these little things that a lot of people don't even consider. And so I just think turning away Deshaun in a moment where he wants to do something and give back in some way to the franchise that he has taken so much from financially and time-wise, I feel like, why don't we let him have a have a go at it?
I this is one of those instances where I think we're so... Everyone is so emotional and one way or the other on like Deshaun Watson, who he is, all that, that like any little thing that comes up about him. We do this a lot in politics too, right? Like you get like people get so entrenched in their side that like the second somebody on the other side does something that you think is like even small, very minimally controversial, like
politics analogies is a great way to limit the YouTube comments, by the way.
That's true.
Let's keep moving towards that.
But no, what I mean is like, you know how it goes. Like the second they do something that's like even the smallest bit controversial, like not even really controversial, they're just like, they're ready to pounce and say like, I can't believe they did this. It's the same as that thing with Deshaun. Like the second Deshaun does anything, Deshaun walks down the street and, you know, looks at somebody the wrong way. And it's like, well, this guy, like it's just very hyperbolic. It's a very hyperbolic subject, very hyperbolic player. So I get it. But to me, I think people are making like a mountain out of a molehill here. Cause I feel the same way. Like there's a lot that can be learned from his experience as a quarterback, from the experiences of just like being responsible, like you said, for the wins and losses of a team and how you handle those pressures, how you go about your podium, you know, when you're at the podium, what you say in a post-game press conference setting, all kinds of stuff. And I do think like this is a way Deshaun's making himself useful right now while he's here. And I can accept that. I think that's fine. I don't think it's really that big of a deal. The other thing I'll say too is like, if you're worried about him influencing Shador Sanders to be like, I don't know, some terrible person. Like, I think Shador Sanders doesn't get enough credit for being more mature in terms of like the player that he is. I understand what the pushback here is going to be. It's going to be a bunch of people calling in and saying, you think Shador Sanders is mature when he's going 100 miles per hour on the highway? Like, okay, I'm fine. Like,
also, don't care.
Everybody is immature to some degree, but I think like from the way he carries himself,
speeding cannot be the measurement of maturity. By the way,
right? No, I agree because everybody pretty much does it. But from the way he carries himself, from the confidence he shows, from the way he already handles, I think those press conference settings, like he comes off as a very mature person, and I think that's all a byproduct of the world and the aura he grew up in as Deion Sanders' son. Like, he's already experienced these things. He is more mature than I think a lot of quarterbacks coming out of college because of the lifestyle that he had. And so I don't think that like one year with Deshaun Watson where he's like trying to just like help you and give you advice and things like that is going to like ruin all that and throw that out the window. I also think too, like, he's openly talked about getting advice from Joe Flacco. Like,
oh no, so
it's all the quarterbacks. I'm glad you brought up Flacco. All these guys are helping each other.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I'm glad you brought up Flacco because I was going to use him in a way. And you're right in that Shador has mentioned a relationship with Joe and how they get along. Yeah. But Joe is the one guy that in the preseason or not preseason, but in minicamp was like, I'm not your role model, essentially. He did the Charles Barkley. Like, yeah. I'm not your role model. I'm not the one you have to look or get to look to for advice. Like, I'll help you if it's convenient and I'm around, but I'm not here to babysit and I'm not here to do everything that's associated with that. So if he's taking himself off the board there, I don't want Kenny Pickett being the one to teach Shador Sanders. Dylan Gabriel can't teach Shador Sanders because they're both rookies. Like, if Deshaun Watson's the only one that is a player that has the experience, that has the accolades attached to what happened in his career and the good that he was doing in the early parts of his career, well, okay. Then open up your brain and figure it out. Like let's go with this.
I think all these quarterbacks can offer something in the way of mentorship to some degree. And the one thing I'll say in Flacco is like, I don't think his overarching point, I think he gets lost in the sauce a little bit on what he said. I don't think it's that Flacco, to me, his point wasn't that like, he won't mentor anybody or he won't help other guys in the room, especially young guys. It was more so just that like he thinks that happens just kind of naturally by being in the room around each other. He's not going to go out of his way to do that though, because he's not like, he didn't get paid to come in here and just like, hey, you're here to mentor these young guys. He came in to try to win the starting job.
And during a practice, for instance, if they're using, you know, two different fields and you have two quarterbacks on one side and two quarterbacks on another, Shador can't look to Deshaun can't look to Joe and be like, so what happened on that play?
We can't really look to Deshaun either.
Joe's doing his own
thing. Deshaun's over in the weight room.
Well, Joe's doing his own thing though. You know what I mean? But like in this instance,
I get what you're saying, but I think there's something he can learn from all these quarterbacks, even Kenny Pickett to a degree. Like, Kenny had a bad experience in Pittsburgh. He's had to deal with like going somewhere else and trying to rebuild, rehabilitate his image.
I'm of the belief that you can learn something from just about anybody.
Yeah,
like even someone as lost as I believe Kenny Pickett is. But I who can offer more as from a football standpoint and a teaching standpoint? I think Deshaun is
Flacco and Deshaun.
But again, we talked about the Flacco side of things. I'm not as convinced. I read it the same way you did. If teaching happens, it'll happen organically around Joe.
Right.
But Joe's not putting his arm around him and saying, "Hey, this is what I happen to see. Let's figure it out and let's diagnose it from here." Or, "Hey, here's a tip for when you go up against this or this or this." I just don't see that from Joe. Joe's dialed in on his own job. And that's fine. I don't begrudge him for that. 216-474-0092. Chris in Cleveland. What's up, Chris?
What's up, JP? Hey, how you fellas doing this evening?
Hey, Chris. What's up, man?
Chris, what's up?
Not too bad. I just don't want any setbacks. You know, for football reasons, the only reason I don't want Deshaun, we're coaching him up or anything like that. Look, this is Stefanski's offense. One, he didn't like Stefanski's offense. He didn't like being under center, and he held onto the ball too long. One of the things with Shadur, one of the nicks on Shadur was the fact that he holds onto the ball too long. A lot of that had to do with the offensive line he had. So as far as for football reasons, I don't think it's anything that he could teach him as far as on the field, because he didn't like Stefanski's offense anyway, and he didn't like two of the things that's necessary. I think one of the things you said, JP, what's his name, is that he does get rid of the ball quicker, you know, as far as for leadership. So I just don't want Deshaun holding him back by teaching him things that's not good towards Stefanski's offense. That can hold him back some. That's all I'm thinking.
All right, I got you. And thanks, Chris. I appreciate you, man. Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, like, again, this goes – I don't want Deshaun and Shador to be best buddies and them holding hands side by side. And then, like, when Shador gets in a game, looking over to Deshaun to be like, was that right? Was that good? But I also think – opening your eyes and opening whatever you can be receptive to that Deshaun would offer up here and there isn't the end of the world either.
I guess I would understand it more too if it was like we heard stories about like, well, hey, they're going out clubbing together and like doing all this stuff. But this, from all we can, all we can deem at this point is when they're at the practice facility and they're in the quarterback room and they're working on stuff individually or as a team or as a group, like whatever, when they're around each other in a football setting, Deshaun is kind of helping mentor him. And I don't have a problem with that. I think we're just making a mountain out of a molehill.
There's got to be value there when it comes to Deshaun. Like, and it might be looked at as a quasi-coach type role, but you're paying him $46 million. If you can get something like this that I actually do think is valuable, why am I going to turn that down and shut it down just because he didn't look good in a Browns uniform and comes with some questionable things elsewhere? Just doesn't make sense to me. 216-474-0092. We'll continue with your phone calls on this. If you're hanging, hang tight. And is there a world where Stefanski's seat is hotter than Andrew Berry's at the end of the season? Warren Sharp weighed in. We'll have what he said as well. It's Afternoon Drive right here on The Fan.